Top doctors are warning you against taking ivermectin to treat or prevent COVID. They're urging the public to avoid the parasite medicine typically used on horses and cattle after celebrity podcaster Joe Rogan said he's using it. The docs say you can develop liver problems and nausea. People in parts of the country continue to look to these medications instead of getting the vaccine. And there are still emotional battles in schools and elsewhere over mask wearing and other prevention measures, even as COVID rates are surging and deaths are on the rise. Yasmin Abutaleb is a health policy reporter at The Washington Post. She and co-author Damian Paletta wrote Nightmare Scenario, Inside the Trump Administration's Response to the Pandemic That Changed History. Abutaleb tells us tonight President Trump's imprint is still all over people's current vaccine-resistant behavior.
I think we are still dealing with the ramifications of the way the former President Trump dealt with this response last year. The reason that we are where we are with the rapid spread of the Delta variant, which is so much more contagious and so much more dangerous than any strain of the virus we dealt with last year, is because large pockets of the country refuse to get vaccinated, even though the vaccines have been readily available and free for anyone who wants them for several months. There's such a distrust of science right now, and a lot of that wasn't all because of President Trump, but a lot of it was spurred by him, and it was spread further because when the president himself, and he has followers who hang on his every word, is undermining scientists and spreading conspiracy theories from the presidential bully pulpit, that has enormous implications. And you see that playing out. You see, we had hydroxychloroquine as kind of the first treatment with no evidence that people seized on, and you've seen that take on various iterations to now where people are taking a drug that's meant for livestock but still won't get the vaccine, and just not trusting the advice of scientists, not just government officials, but scientists and their own doctors about what's best for their health. And that's going to continue. It does not just go away overnight because someone else is president. A lot of people don't trust this president because the former President Trump has told them that the election was stolen from him, that President Biden is not the legitimate president, and because the country is more divided than ever.
One of the major topics that you write about with your co-author is that the president did himself get COVID and went to Walter Reed for treatment. What are you writing about that perhaps we didn't know about? How close to death this president may have come?
He was very close to dying. There were a number of his medical advisors who feared he was not going to make it out of that weekend alive. And in fact, probably the thing that was responsible for his rapid turnaround was this extraordinary effort to get access to what was then an experimental drug, what was called the monoclonal antibody. They're now authorized for use. There was this extraordinary effort to call the FDA commissioner directly to get the drug for the president. Even though it wasn't approved for use yet, it was still in clinical trials. They did get that drug. They administered it to him early. And he, of course, had this dramatic turnaround early in the course of his infection. Before he went to Walter Reed, they were fearing that he was going to have to be put on a ventilator. So he had access to a battery of drugs that pretty much no other person on the planet could have gotten access to. He had access to the best doctors, to the best healthcare. And still, when he emerged from that, he didn't say, I was in a unique position. I had access to the best medical care. I know that this is not the case for everyone. He said, don't be scared of COVID. Don't let it ruin your life. We're going to be fine. And, you know, Damian and I have wondered a lot how different it would have been if he had emerged from that and said, put on a mask, take this seriously, because we know that his supporters would have followed him on pretty much anything he told them to do.
What would you say are a couple of major opportunities for the Trump administration to get COVID under control, opportunities that simply weren't seized?
Early in the pandemic, with all the testing issues, before it spun out of control, that's obviously your best opportunity to keep it from really taking hold and blowing up the way it did in the U.S. Those problems could have happened under any administration. That was an agency problem, not necessarily a Trump-specific problem. But I think in March, when they were having the debate over masks, one of the health officials had a proposal that it was already underway to send masks to every American household. He had partnered with the undergarment manufacturers, Hanes and Jockey and a couple of others, to turn some of their manufacturing facilities to make masks. A lot of them were produced. They were planning to produce enough to give every American about two. And that plan was quashed, A, because some people in the president's orbit did not like the idea of having people wear masks or having the government even urge people to wear masks. And two, because there were so many divisions that there were people who didn't like that this health official was freelancing, that he had not gone through the sort of official channels, and that it would have relied on the U.S. Postal Service when the president was sort of waging a war against them. Another one was in the summer, in July, one of the president's pollsters came to him and told him that 80% of Republicans would be fine with a mask mandate, especially if it meant reopening the economy. Again, that would have been a really big turning point. Universal masking would have saved a lot of lives. But the president's acting chief of staff at the time, Mark Meadows, said, you can't do that. The base will absolutely turn on you. And they didn't do that. And then, of course, when the president got sick, he could have emerged from that experience with some humility, put his doctors front and center, told people to follow public health guidelines, to wear a mask, to social distance, to be careful ahead of the winter. And of course, that didn't happen either.
Let's talk about the man who is still in many ways the face of our battle with COVID. That is Dr. Anthony Fauci of NIH. He's still on TV each week advising the nation. He appears here on WTOP a lot. He is still very much doing his job. But for the conservative portion of the country, the Trump followers, has he indelibly been turned into a villain?
I think so. I was even watching videos of some local county meetings and school district meetings yesterday where people are discussing mask mandates. I mean, they equate public health measures and what they view as overreaching, controlling public health measures with Fauci. It's the same with the whole debate over the origins of the virus. There's still so much vitriol sent his way, even though President Trump is out of office, that people associate him with everything bad out of the pandemic. And you see it even with Republican members of Congress, too. Not all of them. A lot of them obviously respect him. But with people like Rand Paul, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and some others, they also villainize Fauci, and their supporters cling on to that. So he's absolutely still a symbol for a lot of Trump supporters.
There are so many other revelations in your book that we don't have time to get to, but I picked out one that may not have gotten as much attention that may tell us something about the president's authoritarian tendencies. You and your co-author write that the president thought at one point that his aides might ask him to use the National Guard in a particular way. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this was when his aides came to him and made the initial recommendation to call for a national shutdown for 2 weeks, the one in mid-March where most of us got sent home from our offices for what we thought would be a couple weeks and, of course, has turned kind of indefinite for a lot of people. They were very nervous to bring this to him. They thought he would just completely revile the idea of a national shutdown because of the effect it would have on the economy. And when they came to him and recommended this, he said, oh, that's it? Because he thought they were going to tell him that he needed to deploy the National Guard to force people in their homes, which is, of course, not something the U.S. would likely do under any administration. So it was just, like you said, a sort of a signal of how he viewed the office of the presidency, the power of the presidency, that he would have to use military force to force people to follow that. And of course, that's not what happened. In fact, we had not a ton of compliance in many cases with the shutdown.
I just wanted to finish up with people who might say, look, I lived through 4 years of the Trump administration. I know what happened. Do I really need to go back? But you and Damian have put so many details in here that likely were not initially reported. And so there's a lot to learn here. I guess I just wanted to summarize it that way and why you think it's important that we do pick up your book and take a look.
Thank you so much for saying that and for giving me the opportunity to answer that. I think Damian and I learned a lot ourselves, even as reporters and Damian as an editor who were covering this 24/7 in real time from January 2020 through now. We're still covering it every twist and turn. But what we found is, you know, for the book, there were a lot of people willing to speak with us who were not willing to speak with us at the time because they feared for their jobs or were putting their heads down or for whatever reason. And there are a lot of really important details to be learned. And the bottom line is we never want this to happen again. We're still living this. It's obviously nowhere near over. But I think it's really important to understand what went right and what went wrong in this response. We'll have to learn from the Biden administration as well when there's a chance to kind of look back on that. But it's important because we never want this kind of thing to happen again. More than 600,000 Americans have died. And we spoke to more than 180 people for this book. Not a single one defended the collective response. And I think that's so important. We have to understand why. We have to understand how these things were allowed to happen and to make sure that next time the country is better prepared.
That's the Washington Post, Yasmin Abutaleb on Skype, co-author of Nightmare Scenario, Inside the Trump Administration's Response to the Pandemic That Changed History.